Well, those are your prayers tonight. I appreciate you folks having me here. We call this a revival, so we ought to pray that its name fulfilled. We would allow the Lord to revive us. We feel the need of these kind of meetings when we've been a while without them. Life will take its toll on us, and we have to work, and we have to do things, and we accumulate a lot of things in our minds and a lot of things in our hearts. And I think it's good sometimes, from time to time, to set aside these few days and nights of being able to come and sing the songs and hear the word and focus ourselves and truly fulfill the name of the meeting. It's a revival. So Lord, help us to be revived if we feel ourselves slipped a little bit or a little shallow in places or whatever it might be, that Lord, it help us to be able to pick back up and go on. I've had a burden for some time now to face the time that we are living in the United States. It's very easy to become indifferent. It's very easy, I think, to become laxed and lethargic. And I think if it's probably one of the toughest things that we're battling right now in our spiritual walk. So Lord, help us tonight and through this meeting to be able to maybe kick in a gear and get a new inspiration, a new outlook, a new zeal to be able to carry us on through. The scripture says, to endure to the end, same shall be saved. So we got a battle ahead of us, a road ahead of us, and we want to be faithful. Been thinking some about the world around me, and I listen to the local radio. It's not local, but it's West Virginia radio station. About every morning, we get the local weather news, political news of the state, and those kind of things. And it's a challenge about every day of what's going on. About every day out in the world, I'm looking and saying, Lord, have mercy. Of what's going on, of what's accepted, of those kind of things, and it gives me a sense of a lost world. But I want to bring it closer to us tonight, because I don't believe that you have to be a murderer to be lost. I don't believe that you have to have some alternative lifestyle, or you don't have to have cheated people out of millions of dollars. You don't have to have abused children. You can be right here, Springfield, Ohio, Church of God Chapel, come regularly, and be lost, and lose your soul. And Lord, help us tonight to be diligent with our souls. It's the most valuable thing that we're given. And we don't have to do the great evils of the world. We can become indifferent, lethargic, lazy, if you will, just going along, and lose our souls right around spiritual things, right around God being mentioned. You know, you don't have to be an atheist to be lost. You don't have to be a Hitler to be lost. You don't have to be some evil, greatly wicked person. You don't have to be a devil worshiper. You don't have to be a witch. We got to be unsaved. Over in Amos, 6th chapter, in the first verse it says, Woe! That's a warning. It's a take heed. Whoa! But an emphasis here. For us to get the significance of it, the writer says, whoa! Want to get your attention to this. Woe to them that are at ease in Zion and trust in the mountain of Samaria, which are named chief of the nations to whom the house of Israel came. Woe unto them that are at ease. Ease means secure. I'm secure. Do you know it's easy to think that we've got standards. You know what I'm saying? We've got standards. Well, they're valuable, aren't they? You know you can have standards and be lost. Lord help us. You can develop things in your life. You know what I'm saying? You can develop ways that you're very comfortable with life. It's just what you do every day. Habit yourself to life. We're secure. We're at ease. Because we have things that we do. We do wear them down. We got it right. We got our ways about us. You know they're valuable. I'm not putting it there. They're valuable. But you can still hold to those. Back in the winter, my son, he got a job at Snowshoe, and he had just come up from Louisiana, and he had new tires on his car, but you don't need snow tires in Louisiana. So when he put new tires on there, when he put new tires on it, and he told me, he said he needed tires, I said, well, I thought you just put new tires on it. He said, well, yeah, I put some new tires on it. And I said, well, why didn't you put snow tires? And all of a sudden it dawned on me. Well, he was in Louisiana. It's hardly needful to have snow tires on Louisiana. So he had to work, and he didn't have a day off. So I ended up saying, well, I tell you what, I'll take your car down to the station and get some tires put on it. So me and my daughter decides that we're going to take the opportunity to go down there, and there was a nice trout stream right there by the station. And so me and her decided we're going to go down and get them tires on the car, and then we're going to go fishing. So we did, went, got the tires on, we went to go fishing, and I pulled into this wide spot, and we got out and was fishing, and about 45 minutes later, I come up and I put the key in the switch and it wouldn't do anything. It wouldn't click or nothing. Just turn the switch. It wouldn't do anything. Just there. And oh no. It's somebody else's car. Miles from the house. Cell phone don't work. We didn't have a cell phone anyway. I guess it might have worked. I don't think we had one. Anyway, there we are. Well, there's another guy coming by. He was fishing. He comes by and he says, he ended up coming up, and we're there thinking, well, maybe somebody we know will come by or something, or get a jump, or probably, you know, battery's dead and all this. And this guy comes and says, well, you got me having trouble? Yeah, I guess the battery's dead, need a jump. You wouldn't have to, no, he said, I don't think I got any jumpers, but I'll look. And he looked in his Jeep and said, no. And he said, you want me to, I don't live far from here, you want me to go get some jumper cables? And I said, well, you know, I hate to put you out, but, well, yeah, I mean, I'm stuck. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't turn it down. I said, well, we'll be here if you want. But I said, well, let me try it one more time when you get in the car. And I got in the car to turn the key again. And see, my truck I drive every day when I'm home is on the column. Okay. So, habited, I pull in his car, turn the windshield wipers on, turn the switch off and get out and go on. And the car is sitting in drive. It don't start in drive, it starts in park. And I'm sitting and trying to start the car all those times. We sat there all that time because I'm habited. That's what it was. It was a habit. I done what I do every time in my truck. I pull over, put it up in park,
turn the key. It's what I do. I do it 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a day in my truck. I go all over. I'm just going here, there. I do it. And so in his car, I pull over there and do the same thing because we are of habit. It doesn't mean anything because we can get into a habit. It don't mean you're spiritual because you can get into a habit. We can get into habits, all kind of habits of life. I can get into, hey, I want those habits. Get me right. There's good habits to make in your life. You ought to make good habits in your life. They're valuable to have good habits in your life. But what I want to get to tonight is that you can get at ease in your habits and not have anything in your soul. There's what I want to do. You can be at ease in your soul. You can be careful and think, because I've got everything. I've got everything. You look at me, what do you see? You see a Church of God man. Well, look at me. Everywhere we go, me and my family, people come up to me and say, hey, where you all go to church at? I never said we went to church. Went into Cracker Barrel recently. We got there and we went to the, and the lady says, hey, where do you all go to church at? I didn't say I went to church. I come to get breakfast. My habit sticks out all over me, and yours do. You stick to, and that's good. But I want us to be inspired tonight that there's more to it than just the exteriors. If we ain't careful right here in the United States in this time of prosperity, with plenty of food, with plenty of things, with taken care of, with comfort, everything's comfortable. We got all these comfortable. If we ain't careful, we'll comfort ourselves right through all of it and never really have any passion, no desire, no real fervor for God. Just go, you know, be honest with you, that's not really winning. It's not very winning to souls. Souls that are really in need and stuff, it's not very winning just because we live standards. It's not very winning to just see somebody going along. You know what's winning is when you got something and you believe it and you live it and you got passion and you got desire for it and something that you can say with, you don't, it's not second-handed stuff. Well, Brother Salmon said, Brother Larry once said, well, these, that's good to repeat, although I'm not saying it's good to keep our heritage. But we got to have some things that we know for ourselves. The Scripture says, woe unto them that are at ease. Zion has protected me. That's what this Scripture goes on and says. Look at it. It's got bulwarks. It's got walls, great walls. Zion, if you look at it, was a city. It was a city of God. It was a spatial place. God had blessed. Got bulwarks, got walls, got things to make you secure. It was the heart of the empire. If the enemy attacked, they had to attack way out there. Right? They had to attack way off in the distance and fight their way. We're in Zion. We're in the wall. We're in the enemy's way, way, way out there. And so, I can go in here in Zion. And I can just be just as secure, be just easy. I don't need or want for anything. But Lord, help us to have some desire. Listen, I told the Lord when I got saved, I want to serve you and I'm going to commit to do it. And by the Lord's help, I do. Comes time to go to service, I go. My family will vouch for me. Come time to go to service, we go. But I want more than the habit of going to church. When I go, I want to have more. And sometimes when I go and I'm not going that way, I'm saying, this is not what it's supposed to be. I'm going to go and I'll be blessed for the commitment. But I want it to be more than that. I want to go because I get something when I get there. I got a connection with God. I got a connection with the saints. I got a connection with what's going on. I got a connection with the prayer. I got a connection with the song. I got a connection with the Word. I got a connection with it all. And something's real here in my heart. It's more than just a habit of going. And you know, if it's just a habit of going, I'm going to tell you, it gets pretty dull around here. Lord, help us. It does. That's why a lot of people go to the bands. They go to the bop. They go to the show. Because if they don't have anything. They got to have something to stir the flesh up and it be exciting. I want the excitement of the flesh. But I want to have something in my soul. Yes, sir.
Something that's real and alive and vibrant. That works. In this third verse it says, ye that put far away the evil day and cause the seed of violence to come near. Listen to this. Ye that put far away the evil day. You know what that's meaning? Out of sight, out of mind. Like, I'm not ever going to get old. I'm never going to get cancer. I'm not going to get heart failure. I'm putting the evil day away. I'm extending it outside of my thoughts. I'm extending out, putting the evil day away. That's what this is talking about, putting away the idea that the enemy may attack me tonight. I'm putting away the idea that catastrophe or tragedy or heartache or grief or some human ailment might attack my body. I'm putting it way away. It's easier for a young man to do it than it is old, because old ones keep getting reminded. But anybody can do it. I put it out. I'm putting it away from my thinking. This is what they were doing, and the Lord was doing it to them. You're putting it out of your mind as if. But you better be careful. It's as if to say, I don't have to pay for it. I don't have to pay for it. You do have to pay for it. It will catch up with you. The scripture says a little slumber, a little sleep, a little folding of the hands, and poverty will come. Well, it doesn't happen all of a sudden, so what do you do? I like telling this story on myself, and I've since then done something about it, but I remember back when I was a young man, 20 years old. I've always loved raising, growing trees and gardens, and it's been something that I've really enjoyed. And when I was a young man, I would go and look at these fruit trees. And I remember going and looking at them and saying, oh, $15 for that tree, $20, whatever, a tree. And read on the tag, and it'd say, set like 7 years. Take it 7 years to produce. 7 years? I can't wait 7 years. I'm not paying $15 and then waiting 7 years. I'm 52 years old. That was 32 years ago. That's 4.5 sevens almost. I could have raised great big orchards, full grown trees. But I wouldn't do it because I couldn't see it. I couldn't see the end. And this is reverse. I'm going to put the evil day away. I don't see that. You know, men are set in their hearts to do evil, because where is the promise of His coming? Where is the? There is no immediate recompense of reward. There is nothing that just you don't just do something and all of a sudden it's there. It's not like that. But I want to say, when we get at ease in Zion, you're going to have a payday for that. There's going to be some repercussion to that. And you know what happens many times, and not a lot of us here, but with family, but what happens in the family situation a lot of times is that the children are raised under ease. And then somewhere up in there, yo, couple gets serious with God. But they can't make seriousness for the children. How often you see what happens with the ease of it and happening in the generations down from it. They don't see it in the same way. There's so much that happens. Lord, help us to be fired up. Lord, help us to get something real in our hearts. This scripture goes on and says, listen to this. It says, that lie upon beds of ivory. Now, this sounds really cushy. That lie upon beds of ivory
and stretch themselves upon their couches, and eat the lambs out of the flock, and the calves out of the midst of the stall, that chant to the sound of the viol, and invent themselves in instruments of music like David, that drink wine in bowls and anoint themselves. And Jesus, go on with the eye of being at ease in Zion. No attack. No evil day. Nothing to fight for. Nothing to strive for. Just I'll give myself every indulgence, every pleasure. And I'm going to tell you, if you can't see something similar with the world that we live in now, I think we need a lie salve if we can't see this. And what I'm saying is there's nothing wrong with laying down on a bed of ivory sometimes. We all will lay down on the couch. This is indulgence, though. Did you see what I'm saying? And you know, we're bombarded with a world of technological stimulation. We're stimulating our processes with visuals, with audios, with this, and there's food on every corner. There's fast foods. There's there's all kinds. Hey, I like food. I just don't want it to cost me. There's nothing wrong with the technologies. I just don't want it to cost me. Being at ease in Zion. We have a part to play. God has made many promises to us. And God is not slack concerning them. And God will fulfill every promise. As the song says, not one promise has He broken. Not one. But there's always a stipulation to the promises of God. Do you know that? When God makes a promise, it is a covenant promise. I will be your God if you will be my people. See, He promised to be our God, but it wasn't just, I'm going to be your God regardless of what you do. There is never a promise in the Bible that way. All the promises in the Bible are a stipulation of a covenant. I will be your God and you will be my people. I will heal your diseases. God made promises. He told Moses, we got a remedy for these snake bites, these serpent bites. You make a brazen image and put it up on a pole and I'll heal them, right? No, well, now wait a minute. He said He would. If they would look upon it. See, there was condition with it. He didn't just say, Moses, go out there and wave it over the people at night and they'll all be healed of it every day. No, He didn't. He said, you raise it up and if they'll come and look at it. So if somebody's 5 miles away and they get bit, they better hurry. You don't want to die? Come and look at that was the remedy for it, but it was conditional. And so it is with our lives today. God made many promises for our victory. I believe that God is able to give us the victory in 2015. The same as D.S. Warner, John Wesley, Charles, you can go back through the history with the great reformers, you can go back all the way to the apostles, and God gave them the victory, and God's able to give us the same victory in 2015. But it's still conditional. And I can't set knees and get the promise. The scripture says that the kingdom suffereth violence. And the violent take it by force, and it will always be that way. Paul got it by force. Peter got it by force, and if you and I are going to get it, we're going to have to get it by force. We're going to have to get it with passion and desire and with our whole hearts, or we'll miss the promises. Over in the book of 2 Kings, I think I'm wanting 2 Kings 13, and 14. Now Elisha was fallen sick of his sickness whereof he died. And Joash, the king of Israel, came down unto him and wept over his face and said, Oh, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. And Elisha said unto him, take bow and arrows. And he took unto him bow and arrows. And he said to the king of Israel, put thine hand upon the bow. And he put his hand upon it. And Elisha put his hands upon the king's hands. And he said, open the window eastward. And he opened it. Then Elisha said, shoot. And he shot. And he said, the arrow of the Lord's deliverance, and the arrow of deliverance from Syria. For thou shalt smite the Syrians in Aphek till thou hast consumed them. They have consumed them. Now, wouldn't you call that a promise? That's a promise, isn't it? Now, I want to tell you, here's a couple, look in the history of it, and you'll find a couple of faithful men here. Joash was a faithful man, and so was, and Elijah is a faithful man. And they come down to this point, and he gives him an illustration. The arrow of the Lord's deliverance. To me, I don't know about you, but if the Lord come through His prophet and done something like to me, like that, I would assume that would be for inspiration. For inspiration. The Lord just used the mighty prophet, Elisha, who Joash acknowledges. He acknowledges him as this prophet. There was no reason for him to doubt this inspiration that was given him. So if you follow it, he opens the window, shoots the arrow out. And Elisha tells him this is the arrow of the deliverance of the Lord. And listen to the promise. Didn't sound half-hearted to me, did it you? This is going to be deliverance against the Syrians till you have consumed them. Now I don't know what it sounds to you like, but it sounds to me like when you consume them, they're done. That was the promise. But you know, that's not the way it worked out. God made a promise to him, to the king. But the king had a part to play. And he didn't play it. I don't know what all was going on together with this guy. But he didn't play it like he should have played it. He had a part to play. He had something to give to it. There was something God was wanting from him, expectation of him too. Something he's supposed to be, a place he's supposed to be in. He just got the inspiration. He got the word. He got the promise. This is the way it reads. And he said, take the arrows. And he took them. And he said unto the king of Israel, smite upon the ground. And he smote thrice and stayed. Now I always had in my mind that he took a handful of arrows and hit the ground with them. But some assumed it different, that if the whole reading was taken, that he actually shot the arrows. Well, anyway that he done it, it's all the same. He told him to take it. My assumption would be that he had five or six arrows. All that was given him, all that he had. In me, it's the analogy played out. All that he had. You understand? All that he had. I think he had a handful of arrows. I don't know if he shot them. Maybe he did. Strike the ground with them. Through three. I'm done. You know, you can have the victory. God comes along and says, you can have the victory. But you know what a lot of people say? I want the victory. Oh, but what do I have to do for it? He was an old guy that lived in our community while I was growing up. He loved the garden. Boy, he could raise some beautiful crops. And he had this corn patch and these beans. He always raised these bean patch. You can see the beans hanging, these green beans. Well, a guy come by one day and said to him, said, I'd like to have some of those beans. He said, you wouldn't be willing to get rid of some of those beans, would you? Well, this was a very charitable old feller. He always raised enough and he had plenty. And he said, I'll tell you what,
He said, I pick most of the ones. One said, you just come and help yourself to them. And the guy kind of said, well, is there any already picked? And he didn't. And he left. And he was saying he needed them for his family. And the guy left and never picked any beans. Well, the guy thought him said, well, no, you have to pick them yourself. Well, I ain't going to pick them myself. I want the beans. But what I got to do to get them? I got to work for them. I got to pick them. I don't know, pick them. You know, that's what the children of Israel did on the other side of Jordan. What's over there? The Lord gave us the land of Canaan. That's our land, right? We got the victory. We can get the land. What do we got to do for it? Well, you got to go over and conquer the land. We don't want it that bad. We're just going to give it to us. No sweat, no tears, no push, no passion, no desire. Thought the Lord was just going to make a promise and give it to us. No, He's not. God makes a promise and then puts it in your hand to be able to fulfill the promise that God made. God made a promise here to him, and he hits the ground three times and stops. Boy, you really want the victory, don't you, King? You're really excited about this God stuff. You're really excited about this promise to make. Well, one, two, three. But the prophet said to him, that the man says in the 19th verse, and the man of God was wroth with him. And said, thou shouldest have smitten five or six times. Then hast thou smitten Syria till thou hadst consumed it. Well, wait a minute. That's what the Lord said he was going. That was the promise. God made a promise to him that you're going to consume them. The era, the deliverance, the whole scene was set up for the consuming of it. And the king failed to get the promise of God fulfilled in his life. And for those that followed him, and for the generations after him, they had a thorn in their flesh the whole way through because they never consumed them. They only won three battles because that's all the king had in his passion. All that he had in his heart, all that he had in his desire, all that he had in his want to. Sure, I'd like to have a bunch of beans if you'll pick them for me. Come on. I'd like to have victory in my soul if somebody'd hand it to me on a plate. I'd like to have some real, I'd like to really be able to stand for some stuff. I'd like to have some faith if the Lord just booms it out of heaven on me. I'd like to be able to stand against some stuff. I'd like to be a man of God. If it just happens. But if I have to do too much for it, I'll just be less than that. I'll just go on being less and less and less. Lord, help us. Woe unto them who are at ease in Zion. Because I fear that the many promises of God are coming up so shallow. Because it meets, every one of His promises meets us at our condition. It met Joash at his. Joash did not consume Syria like the promise was. But he could have. If he would have said with passion and started smiting that ground. Passion. Desire. I think when David went up there, it's that ruddy young lad. And he went up there to the army, to his brothers, to greet the captain. You remember the story. Jesse sent him up there to see how his brethren fared. He goes up there and he looks in the battle's pits. They're set in their orders there. Here's one enemy on this side. Oh, here's the Philistines. Sure, it'd be exciting. Sure, he was wanting to know what's going on. Don't doubt it for a bit. But I think David had something in his heart. And he went up there with the expectation that Israel had a God that made promises. Do you understand what I'm saying? He said, I'll be your God. What's that mean to you? Well, how would you like for God to come to you tonight and say, I will be your God? What would that mean to you? I'll be your personal God. I like that. I like that. If you'll be my child.
Okay. Well, why don't you just be my God? No. I'll be your God. I mean, David went up there as a child of God with a God that said, I'll be your God. Well, I'm going to be your child. And he went up there with the expectation of every promise. And all the promises that had ever been fulfilled, David understood and knew. I think the stories around the campfires, I think Jesse's stories and the stories handed down, I think David knew about Gideon. I think he knew about Samson. I think he knew about Moses. I think he knew about Joshua and them walls falling down. I think he believed in a God that promised. I think he knew the story of Abraham and how Abraham tried. I think he knew the story. And how God was faithful to Abraham. And when he was old, him and Sarah, when he was old and above years, they had a son. His name was Isaac. He believed it. And each one of them's promise was fulfilled. And David went up there. You know what made him great? He had faith in God. He had passion. He wasn't bigger, stronger, smarter, faster than anybody there. Didn't say he was. He just said he had the Spirit of God in him. He had something that burned in him. And when he went up there and saw it, he was willing to give his life for because he was a child of God. And God said he was going to be my God. So I'm going to be his son. I'm going to be his follower. I'm going to do what he bids me to do. And now I got a job to do. And Goliath, just an uncircumcised Philistine, he's just a big piece of flesh. But folks, that's what we still battle, a big giant piece of flesh. And it ain't yours. It's mine. It's mine is what I'm fighting. Oh, to be at ease in Zion is to pamper that big giant. Cuddle him up, take a... No, God has given promises. We can take that guy down. We don't have to be subjects to Goliath. So Lord, help us not to be at ease in Zion. To be fervent. And I say, the question would immediately arise in my mind to say, well, how? Is this is something that booms out of heaven? What do I do if I don't feel? What do I do? I want to say there's got to be some self-sacrifice involved in it. There's got to be some laying down aside. And some people say, well, if I don't feel like it, it's kind of hypocrisy for me. No, it's not. The decision's what's important. I don't have to feel like anything. You can decide, I'm going to serve God and take off on that. I'm going to give up. I'm going to do this. And God will bless. Because I give him a heart to do it. Lord, help us to have some passion and some zeal. 2015 and all that's going on around, I'm afraid that we can get caught up in our daily motions, our daily things, our daily activities, our worldly activities, all these things bombard us into complacency in our spiritual lives. Just complacent about it. Well, I feel like, I think I'm saved. I feel like that I'm saved. I feel like, but boy, it's just no real. Lord, help us. Another scripture I want to look at is, I think it's a scripture in Job 16 chapter, I think. Let's see, 16. Oh, see, the ninth verse, it says, he teareth me in his wrath. He hateth me. He gnasheth upon me with his teeth. Mine enemies sharpen his eyes upon me. They have gaped upon me with their mouth. They have smitten upon me, upon my cheek, reproachfully. They have gathered themselves together against me. God hath delivered me to the ungodly and turned me over to the hands of the wicked. I was at ease, but he hath broken me asunder. Well, what do you think of that little passage? Wow. All this stuff happened in the day that most people put away. The day of evil that most people put away. Here's an example of this evil day crashing in. And the acknowledgement, I was at ease. I was in my comfort. I was in my security. I'd wrapped myself around with the things that I protect myself with, the walls, and I protect myself against hurt and harm and emotion. I packed myself around with these things, and little good did it do me. I find the older I get, the more realization that I have of how much I need the Lord. How feeble I am, how life is fleeting away, and also at the same time I have a realization of how easy it would be for me to miss the mark by being at ease. By not keeping up the desire, the passion. You want to know the truth? The world already knows what it takes to make a winner. The business world knows it. At pep rallies. You know, there's businesses that actually have pep rallies to get their employees. Monday morning pep rally. We used to have these Monday. You ever have those? You're into that. Sure. What are they doing? Come on. Come on, guys. Get enthused about the company. Make some extra here. We'll give you some bonuses. There's some rewards. Doing all this to do what? So everybody's not just humdrum and don't care about anything. Because you don't get it done. If you don't care, you don't do it. You don't get it done. Oh, get by with it. I work by the hour. You know, companies don't like attitudes like that. Because they don't get it done. This is about making money for you. You want an incentive? You want a, well, they call it motivational speaker? Come in and motivate you that the more this company does, the better your stock does in the company. You can become somebody right here. Because they want them to have some passion. Now, they know that. Do you know that sports teams knows that? I remember in high school, we used to have pep rallies. Get everybody together on Friday evening for the school let out last period. Everybody gets in the gym and they get to going, getting the team up, get the school up, get everybody going. Cause ain't no benefit in it. It was a waste of time, man. No. Gets everybody going. Gets the players all pepped up, rally, ready to go. We're gonna do it. We're gonna, it's motivational. See? I like telling this. About 2 years ago, I was in Guthrie. Turned the radio on early one morning, about 10 o'clock. And there was an announcer on there said, I'm out here at the field, out here at the stadium. And he said, people are crowding in. Whatever Oklahoma's colors are, whatever. Crimson. Oh, it's a sea of crimson out here, the announcer said. And I said, oh, they're going to have a football game. Obviously, it was a Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. They're going to have a football game, I said to myself. Oh, they must be playing at noon. There's a football game at noon, 10 o'clock in the morning. Well, the announcer goes on a little bit and said, yeah, it's going to be a good rivalry. It's going to be a good game. Place is crowding up. And the game was like at 8 o'clock that night. It's the kickoff at 8. 8 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. These people were out there. These people were out there priming themselves at 10 o'clock in the morning. Sea of color out there. Grill. Getting it going. You know why? You know the word fan? You know what that's just a cutoff of a word. You know what the word is? Fanatic. Did you know that? Fan is a shortened version of fanatics. They're fanatics. They're fanatics for their team. Now, fanatic's a negative word. But you know, we can be fanatics for Jesus. It's okay. You can be fanatics for holiness and righteousness and doing right. You can come earlier to service. No! Preacher! Don't suggest another minute there! Well, come in and pray before... We'll stay after... Oh, no! No! Lord, help us. See what I'm saying? I know that this is a battle. Because they're doing it for the flesh. And I know it's a battle in the spirit. Because they worry. But Lord, help us to see the importance of what we're doing. Because to be honest with you, if we haven't done it enough to convince ourselves that it's worth it, you ain't got a chance to convince anybody else. You're going to have to be convinced first that it's valuable enough for me to give that kind of passion and desire for it. And I like to tell this story too. I started working for a company called Allegheny Surveys. My boss was Marshall Robinson, and I thought the world of him, and still do. He was a good boss and a great man to me. I'm going to tell you, he started a business one time, and I admired him for this because he hired me. I was glad for that. But he, why I admired him was, while I was going home every night to my warm bed and warm house and all that, he was starting a company and he was putting everything into it because he knew had to put it into it. And he was sleeping in a cellar top with cracks in the walls. Cold. I don't know how he come back from the mines and done so. It was just a sacrifice. Such a sacrifice. Well, the last time I talked to him, he has a couple branch offices and about 40 employees, and he's done success. He don't sleep in a loft now. He built him a real nice home. I don't know what he's done since then. They had a wife, children, and he was successful. And the reason I admire him for it was because he done what it took to do it. He gave his comfort up. He gave up to get that. A lot of people that tried to do that kind of stuff. I've seen people start companies, and the first thing they do is take all of the success of their business and put it into their personal life until the companies, and they have nothing. He didn't do that. He made a very successful company, a surveying company in Central West Virginia. And they're still going today. And he's been very successful. And he did it because he sacrificed to do it. And you and I have a much greater thing than he has, I feel. That's honorable, but we got something tomorrow. It's called eternity. It's called the eternity of others. It's called bringing people to Christ, bringing them to salvation. We have such a more of a cause. Lord, help us fight against this day that we live in. Woe. The scripture says, woe unto them are at ease in Zion. Did I get all that scripture? I was at ease, but he hath broken me asunder. He hath also taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces and set me up for his mark. Archers. So I'm talking about a target. I think about those kind of things sometimes, and I think, Lord, make us willing to do whatever we have to do. The times that I shudder and yet appreciate above everything else was the times that the Lord grabbed me by the neck and shook me and said, you're about to go the wrong way. You're out of line. And the chastisement of the Lord is not peaceful. It's grievous. But it will yield the peaceable fruits of righteousness. It will produce. Lord, help us to have passion and desire and seek the Lord fervently with all of our heart. You pray for me.